The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We're going to have a good one today. A lot of things to talk about. Got Doug Hughes in the house, the doctor. Remember, folks, he's not really a doctor. I had someone say, I didn't know Doug had his PhD. He does not have his PhD, but I like to call him the doctor because it's kind of fun. He doesn't play one on the radio. He doesn't play one on TV. Actually, I guess you do play one on the radio, Doug. Welcome to the big show. Appreciate
Glad to be here.
We're going to have a good one. I was camping last week in beautiful West Boggs Park in Lagodi, Indiana, and many, many times have I done a show live from there on a Saturday morning back in the old days, but didn't have to do that this time. Enjoyed the weekend. It was a beautiful weekend, but for those of you that want the fishing report out of West Boggs Park, it was terrible. Even a fantastic fisherman like myself, Doug, couldn't pull them in.
Some days it's just like that. I don't know what it is. Yeah.
Let's get off started here right with a little news of the week brought to you by Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. It's supported by us here at Comprehensive Financial Consultants. To learn more about Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, go to MCSHOF.com. You know, the market has obviously been on a tear, new record highs every single day, it seems like. And over the last 25 years, this comes from by the numbers, the S&P 500 has gained an average of only 4.9% over the final 3 months of the year. Now, that may sound like an only, but it sounds like a lot to me. 20 of the last 25 fourth quarters, 80% have produced a positive total return in the market. So here we are at record highs, and you're thinking this has got to end, right? Well, according to by the numbers, the last 3 months of the year have typically been pretty, pretty strong. And the index has only been down 1 year, believe it or not, in the last 14 years. That was in 2008 when we dropped, gosh, Doug, what was it, 38% or something like that by the time it was all over. The S&P 500 has experienced 10 drops of at least 5% during its bull run that will reach 103 months in length in just a week from now. So, folks, we've been on this run, and I just met with someone who was talking about how great things have been going and how she expects her returns to continue, and I hope they do. But when you forget 2008, you forget 2000, 2001, 2002, you have biases. You have a biases of the recency of those returns or situational bias, but you just have to realize that over a long period of time, we're going to have great runs like this, we're going to have big declines like this, and at the end of the day, it usually reverts to the mean. Hey, I found this pretty interesting as well. You know, we've been talking a lot about tax reform, tax reform, tax reform. Did you know that just 28% of individual tax returns that were filed for the year 2014 took an itemized deduction for state and local taxes? 22% of individuals that filed a tax return with itemized deductions took a mortgage exemption, a mortgage interest expense deduction. At the end of the day, a lot of people are taking standard deductions, and that's why I think there's been so much news about if you double the standard deduction, how much that will help lower income people, older people, because as people like Doug and I who have mortgages, that have kids, that are paying some taxes, it seems like that's the age group, Doug, that itemized their taxes. Mm-hmm. So all I'm saying is, yeah, give the double deduction on the standard, but hey, man, we still need our itemized deductions as well. And then finally, Doug, we have some news.
Yeah, very interesting. As we were getting ready to come up here, of course, this notice happened a couple hours prior around noon, but the House passed the $4.1 trillion budget. This was the first concrete step towards tax reform. The Republicans outvoted the Democrats and some Republicans 219 to 206. This kind of paves the way for tax reform by the end of the year. So this was the first step. We've heard a lot about it, been a lot of hand-wringing about it, wondering who's going to get what, what's going to happen here, what's going to happen there. Interestingly enough, there is a big part of this is going to be spent on defense. And then, of course, always there's going to be different types of construction products, projects, and things like that. But it's the first step, and it was a win.
Well, at least they were able to pass something.
They were able to pass something, yes.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about bonds. You know, bonds aren't that bad. People keep saying, stay away from bonds. Interest rates are going up. Also, Japan's rebound. Is it for real? A really cool article in the Wall Street Journal this past week. And I thought I would reflect a little bit on what we've talked about from Japan's past and how we related it to the United States just a few years ago. I think it's pretty interesting stuff. We'll be back to talk about that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, Doug, let's talk about bonds only because I think right now this focus has been on stocks. Focus have been on the Dow, the S&P, the NASDAQ, what you name it. That's where the focus has been. You don't hear anyone on the news talking about fixed income or bonds. The only thing you hear about is interest rates are going to go up. They're going to go up. How long have we heard that? Maybe for about a decade now. But I wanted to take a minute and talk just about bonds, fixed income, the purpose of bonds, why bonds aren't bad, how interest rates do affect bond prices. And I just think, in my opinion, as complex as the equity markets are, people tend to simplify them greatly, the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, from the fixed income perspective, it's actually equally complex, just in a different way. But at the root of it, it's actually very simple. But people, for the most part, don't understand bonds.
You know, typically when we say the word bond or bonds, people just simply think that safety. They think it's always a safer place to be than stocks. So first they think safety. Next they think, I'm going to buy this particular instrument so that I can get an income from it. And the truth is that both of those are true, but we can't just associate the word bond with safety. Remember, when you buy investments or when you invest money, I should say, you're either becoming an owner or a loaner. Mm-hmm. When you're buying equities, you're an owner. You're buying shares of a particular corporation. When you're a loaner, you are loaning money for a specified amount of time for a certain interest rate to be paid to you. At the end of that time, that instrument, it matures, you get your money back, and you get to redeploy that into something else. And so for someone who needs that kind of strategy, a bond is a fine investment vehicle to be involved in. But the reality is you can't just use the word safe with bond. You need to understand how it works, not just that it's safe. And there's sometimes a smear of people's understanding of where a bond really fits in.
Anytime you loan money, folks, which it is a bond, you have to worry about the credit worthiness or the ability for someone to pay back that loan. And that's really where the risk lies, is in the credit risk. But you also have something called interest rate risk. And you'll hear that if interest rates go up, bond values go down. Completely true. There's other factors at work as well, but we're not going to make it too complex. And if interest rates go down, bond values go up. Well, let's think about why that's true. If I have a bond that is planning to pay me 5%, let's say, for the next 20 years, and that's contractual, it can't change, and in the 20th year, I'm going to get my principal back. But in the meantime, interest rates go up. And interest rates go up from 5 to, let's say, 7%. Well, now someone coming into the market that wants to invest is saying, hey, wait a second, 5? I don't like that. 7? I like that. So I'm going to get 7% now for 20 years. So my bond that won't mature for 20 years, paying 5%, it's less attractive, it's less valuable. So my value went down. If I want to sell it, I'm going to have to sell it for less. Now, the opposite's true as well. If interest rates, say, went from 5% to 3%, now it's like, wow, I have a 5% bond. Man, I could sell it for more than I'm going to get back at maturity. So at the basics of all of this, it's if the interest rates go up, then the existing security that I own's value would go down. If the interest rates go down, my value will go up. That's interest rate risk. Credit risk is, hey, I loaned to a person that can't pay me back. That's credit risk. But at the root of all this, bonds have fixed interest rates. They have fixed maturity dates for the most part. And you can rely on those cash flows. And that's where I think bonds can be very, very useful right now. Not just as a portfolio stabilizer, but maybe someone who is going to need money sooner than later. Someone that doesn't want to take the market risk with money that they're going to need next year or the next year. So whether it be a retirement income plan or paying for a new roof or paying for college or wanting to buy a new car, anything that you're going to need money for in the next few years, you're going to want it in a good, safe place. And I think right now we've been becoming lured into thinking, man, the market's great and new highs every day. And why would I take it out of this, Doug? Because I don't need to put my roof on until February. The point is that things can change quickly. They can change on a dime. And that money that you're going to need sooner than later should be invested differently than long-term money.
Absolutely. And David, you know, we only throw this out as caution because we have seen this happen in our careers. In 1999, when people thought markets would do nothing but march up, 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 and they would make purchases or have, again, long-term investment strategies like equities for short-term expenses, trying to beat the market, trying to time the market. Listen, folks, this is really where it's very valuable to sit down with a financial professional and discuss time horizons and what is going to be coming up over the next 5 years that you're aware of, and what happens if something you're unaware of pops up. And this is why it's so important that time horizons be a really serious discussion about your portfolio, because no matter where you're at in life, you have short-term investments, mid-term investments, and long-term investments. One last thing on bonds, David, I wanted to mention is that when we say the word bonds, these can come in the form of corporate bonds, government bonds, municipal bonds, international bonds. So bonds come in lots of different shapes and sizes. Please make sure to our listening audience when you're making a decision about investing into bonds that you really know what you're getting into, because much like any other investment, it's easier to get into something than sometimes it is to get out of something or to know the time frame. So just when we say the word bond, it doesn't just necessarily mean the old savings bond you can turn in at the bank. Lots to think about, and as you mentioned earlier, the equity market's being complex. The bond market might even be a little more complex in the different layers, and it's very valuable to have some good insight about that.
And one quick word of caution, that we are talking about individual bonds, bonds that are individually owned, that have fixed interest rates, fixed maturity dates. That's true with bonds. But most people own bond funds, and a bond fund is made up of all those types of bonds, but there's always money going in, there's always money coming out, there's never a maturity date on a bond fund. So when we say bonds will mature, yes, the bonds within that fund will mature, but the fund itself will not mature. Right. And I think that's something that we needed to just be, you know, be a little bit cautious of as you own bond funds, because at this point, you know, if rates do go up, then, you know, you will see a decline in the value of your bonds, and you know, you got to maybe wait that out. Speaking of interest rates, Doug, we've had low interest rates for a really, really long time. And, you know, everyone says rates are going to go up, rates are going to go up. I mean, the Fed might raise rates, they might not, but the capital markets are what really dictate interest rates. How much are people, you know, willing to accept to take this bond for this amount of time? And when you look at places like Japan, where interest rates have been near zero for 20 years, folks, rates don't have to go up.
No.
They do not have to go up. All you have to do is look at Japan and say, you know, look, they've been saying rates are going to go up for years and years and years, and they've been here for 20 years. The interesting thing about Japan is it's all reflective of their growth. If you have no growth, if you have no inflation, then your bond rates are going nowhere, because it is a direct correlation between growth and inflation will dictate long-term interest rates. And right now, folks, we're still not showing a lot of inflation. We're not showing a, you know, robust growth, at least not yet. And that's why I think rates could stay low for a long period of time. And when you go back and look at Japan, remember, they were the number two largest economy in the world. They're now number three, just behind China. They are a consumer-driven economy, just like ours. They are an older population than the United States by about 10 years. So when you talk about our baby boom generation, you know, being, you know, in the from, you know, in the early 50s to 70, you know, you're looking at Japan, you know, older than that. I mean, you're looking at their folks, you know, 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And just like we've been saying for years, when people age, do they go out and spend more on discretionary items or less? They spend less. I'll answer the question for you quickly so you don't have to think about it. And that's been happening in Japan for so long. And because they really don't have immigration like we have, our doors still swing in. They haven't had the young people coming in to help add to the consumption-based economy, to help add to growth, to inflation. And that's why when you look at the stock market, even though it's been hitting these new highs, or not new highs, highs since 2015, yeah, everyone's like, man, Japan, is it for real this time? Listen, the close of Japan's Nikkei market, yeah, it's higher than it was in 2015. But remember, the high of the market occurred in 1989 when it was nearly 40,000. It dropped all the way to 6,000, and it's just now back to, what, around 20, 21,000. Mm-hmm. So, Doug, 20 years later, it's not even back to even. And I'm not saying that you should worry about that as it relates to the U.S. market. I'm just saying that things don't have to change. They can stay the same for longer than expected.
Absolutely. And that's why we always say to people, when you're putting together your investment portfolio, it's just so difficult to say to yourself, this is exactly how it's going to change. It may not change. It may stay the way that it is. And your portfolio needs to have that flexibility worked out into it to adapt to different types of markets. It's very interesting, too, about the people in Japan. You know, they actually prefer holding the yen. Oftentimes, you know, they have real estate or they have the yen. They're not
Bitcoin.
Big Bitcoin people. But they, you know, over here, investing is kind of cool and a fad and things like that. They went through that. They've gone through that. It's just not.
You can buy stocks in Japan at deep value discounts, and the question is, why aren't they? Because they don't want to. They've been there, done that.
They've been there, done that.
They're great savers.
They've gone from 40 to 20. Now we're hitting highs at 21 from 2015. They're good savers. We even had a friend of ours we had lunch with not long ago that talked about the minimalist. Like if you go into their homes, they just don't have things that aren't necessary filling their walls.
They may have one picture on a wall.
Exactly, right.
They're not spending a bunch of money on a bunch of stuff that they don't actually use. They have multi-generational homes as well.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so it's just a much different society. And I'll tell you, is Japan for real right now? Is it back? I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. But hey, don't use that as strict investment advice to stay in Japan.
But don't forget this, David. In our lifetimes, the 1980s, we remember when the Japanese were going to buy all of our national parks and take everything over.
Well, think about that.
Yeah,
I
remember that.
ISO 2000 management style. I remember that in the 1980s. They were buying everything. And then, boom, it all kind of fell apart. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, did you know that Americans are actually spending more in taxes than they do on food and clothing combined? You know, I've been saying this for a long time, that the biggest expense for someone in retirement is taxes. But what about through your working life? We'll come back and have some fun with this. And then later on, we're going to be discussing open enrollment period is coming. Medicare open enrollment is coming soon. And we're going to have Josh Norris from our office on to talk about what is open enrollment, who should be paying attention to this, who can ignore it, and how they get a hold of us if they need a little bit of help. We'll be back with that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, here on Thursday night, if you want to say hey to me, I'm going to go to Yonko's and have some dinner tonight. My brother-in-law's in town. Are you going to be there?
Well, now. Sure. I wasn't aware, but yeah, I'll be glad to join
you. I'll pull one of these, you know, deals where, like I did today when I didn't have money to pay my parking. I'm like, Hughes, do not go into the don't go in without me. I need $1.25. Oh, gosh. If it wasn't only true, right, Hughes?
Yeah, that's right.
So anyway, come by and say hi to me at Yonko's. You know, I had something else the other day I was going to mention. Okay, so I would call you a pizza connoisseur, maybe even a pizza snob.
Well, yes, you can tell, but yes, yeah. I've spent a lot of time around pizzas, made a lot, delivered a lot, and eaten a lot. So yeah, I know the pie.
So Swingin' Pizza moved from its old traditional location, that little beat up building on 17th Street, to a really fancy spot there on North Walnut. Okay. No, college. So I'm North sorry, college. College.
Okay.
I only lived here for 47 years, and I still get college and Walnut mixed up.
I know. Isn't easy good? To do.
So we had something going on. All of a sudden, I'm like, you know what? Wonder if the swinging pizza tastes as good as it did when it was at the old building. And mm-hmm. I'm going to order some. So Misty and Will were busy doing something, and I'm like, I called them, ordered a pizza, went there, picked it up. I will tell you, it may very well be the best pizza I've ever had.
Really?
And I'm not to your level.
Well,
when it comes to critiquing pizza, but I mean, and I thought to myself, you know what? It was so good, but then I also thought, you know what? We've got a lot of great pizza places in town.
We do.
I mean, some really good pizza places.
Yeah.
So one of my clients came in this week, and I was telling him about how great Swingin' was, and that, you know, I hadn't had it for a long time. He said, you know what? My wife and I have been on a mission to eat every pizza in Bloomington, mm-hmm. and they've been kind of keeping track, having a little scorecard, and they were getting ready to go to Swingin', but they've been to Cafe Pizzeria, they've been to all the specialty places, they've been at all.
Sure.
And I thought, what a cool thing to do, and they're retired.
I have a set of clients who are retired, and they're hitting every place that serves barbecue in Bloomington. They want to know who serves the best barbecue.
They haven't been down to my house yet.
Well, man. I know.
Mine's free, too. The price is right. You've got to wait till the big green egg gets cooking on a Sunday afternoon. So anyway, I'll let you know when that's available. But, you know, speaking of food, and when you think about it, I mean, it does cost a lot to eat out, obviously, mm-hmm. and you know, people spend a lot on clothing, especially people in our field, because you have to put suit and ties on a lot. But there was an article that came out recently from Yahoo Finance, and it talked about how Americans are spending more on taxes than they are food and clothing combined. Survey came out according to BLS Survey. Well, that's an interesting acronym. But anyway, in 2016, they talked about how many consumer units there were in America, and they surveyed a bunch of them and were determining what people spent money on. Well, they were spending combined on food, which was $7,200 a year, and clothing, $1,800 a year, combined $9,000 a year on food and clothing. That same year, they spent on average $10,489 in taxes. So at the end of the day, they spent more on taxes than just about anything else. And Doug, we've been preaching about this for quite some time that, hey, yeah, everyone wants to lower the taxes now. That's natural. That's instant gratification. I get it. But at the end of the day, it's the taxes later that are going to matter. And you've heard me say this on the show, guys, many times before. I've referenced The Power of Zero book by David McKnight on how taxes will have to go up in the future just simply to pay for the things we've already promised. We call them unfunded liabilities. David Walker, former Comptroller of the United States, beating that drum hard, still beating the drum hard, but he was under Bush and Clinton administrations. You know, that's basically the CPA of America. No one knows more about America's finances than he does. And he said, listen, if things don't change, in fact, even if things just stay the same, we're going to have to double taxes. And when he asked different folks, you know, come up with a four-letter word to describe why it's going to have to, most people would think of kids and wars and, you know, whatever. But he said, hey, it's math, M-A-T-H. The math behind it says we're going to have to double taxes. So what we've been saying to people for quite some time, taxes are going to be your most expensive thing in retirement. How do you put yourself in a better position so that when it comes to retirement, you're not the person holding the bag? And Doug, I'll tell you what, I don't know. I'm pretty passionate about that message. I've been beating it for a while, but here we go. Proof's in the pudding, not just for retirees, but working folks.
We've talked about tax diversification ad nauseum on this show. We have talked about diversifying stocks, bonds, but we've also done our very best to talk about tax diversification. The difference also, David, in the withdrawal rate structure of a retirement income portfolio. If someone has $1 million and they need $50,000 a year, they may think, I need 5%. No, how much they need?
About
probably 7%. The impact of withdrawal on a portfolio between 5% and 7% can oftentimes be enormous. And so if you're able to position your retirement portfolio in a way to have some tax diversification, then you're also going to be able to help with your withdrawal rate feature. And this is something that listen, we can talk, you know, an easy hour program about this, but this is something people just aren't putting into the calculation when they do their calculations on the online.
When it comes to taxes, all of our computer programs do this. They assume that taxes in 20 years are the same as taxes mm-hmm. today, and that's where the flaw, in my opinion, Doug's opinion, is. Now, go back to that. You said I have to take $70,000 out to get 50. All we're trying to do, folks, is say, hey, there's some things you can do now so that you can get your 50 out, and maybe it only costs you $5,000, not $20,000. I mean, that's exactly. a car for some people.
That's a car.
That's
yeah.
a big expense, and that's yeah. every single year.
And that also, David, when we hear everyone talk about the 4% rule, the 5% rule, what that doesn't also indicate is what if your portfolio is down? So if the portfolio is down, say, a 10% and you're taking out 5, that's 15. But actually, 15 can turn into 17 pretty quick just based on taxes, and that changes everything once again.
Hope we didn't scare you too much, folks. We're just trying to be the reality show.
The reality show.
The reality show. Doug Hughes is with me. Hey, we're going to take another break. I want to talk about life insurance when we come back. I kind of missed the boat in September. I think it was Life Insurance Awareness Month in mm-hmm. September, and it just blew by like the rest of my life seems to be blowing by. Mm-hmm. And here we are in October, and I don't know what October is. I mean, I could talk about how you only have a few more days to do a recharacterization of a Roth IRA, but how boring would that be? Let's talk about life insurance, something that's really exciting when we come back. I want to talk about, you know, just this concept. I have run across so many people, including people that are my good friends, that are just so grossly underinsured. You might ask someone, hey, do you have life insurance? The answer is, yeah, I have life insurance through work. Okay, how much do you have? Oh, I have 4 or 5 times my pay. Great. Well, they think that's enough. And it's not. In most cases, it's not even close to enough. So we want to start walking people through just how do you determine what you need, what kind of insurance you should buy, what about other uses for life insurance that maybe I hadn't even thought of. And we're going to have Josh Norris jump in on the next segment as well. He's been sitting over here patiently waiting for his turn
yes,
to talk about
has.
Medicare.
Yeah.
And that's not boring, folks. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are interested in hearing about Medicare.
And need to make decisions. They're getting a lot of stuff in the mail.
So yeah. when we come back, we'll have a joint discussion here about life insurance and much, much more, I'm sure. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. I always wait for that part of the bump music before I jump right in because that's the best part.
That's the
part that makes you wish that you were sitting on a beach somewhere. Now, I will say this to you guys. We're going to bring Josh in now. And Doug, I know you got to take off here in just a minute or two. But so it's fall break this weekend.
It is.
And we're going to head out and go somewhere. And, hey, I have people watching my house, so... You know, don't plan to go open the pool and hang out mm-hmm. or down at my place. We have folks, and I have dogs. They sound vicious. They're not vicious, but we're going to head out. Now, we had planned to go to Clearwater, Florida. We thought, let's go to Clearwater, man. It's going to be great down there. We'll hang out, and then we'll come back Tuesday night. Well, we got up on Thursday morning, and my wife said, did you see the weather down there? I go, no, and we pulled it up, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I don't know if it's a tropical storm or what it is, but something's coming through Clearwater, or that's the whole Florida, really. And, I mean, tons of rain. They're expecting tons of rain. And I'm thinking, this is miserable. I do not want to go to Clearwater, Florida, and be stuck with my 16-year-old son and my wife in a pouring down environment where we're stuck in a hotel room or looking for movies to go to. I mean, it just gets tough, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, hey, what if we pivoted here? I mean, we're talking the last minute, right? Mm-hmm. We're leaving on Friday.
Okay.
And she said, what do you mean? I said, let's pivot. I mean, we got Southwest tickets you can, you know, redirect. You know, we can maybe go. So all of a sudden, within like 2 hours, we're now going to Disneyland.
All right.
We're going to Disney.
Not World. Land.
Disneyland in California. So I checked the weather there, and I said, let's go to Disneyland. So Angela at our office is actually a Disney planner. I don't
yes.
know if that's the right term, but magical planner, right? Everything's magical.
Yes.
Most magical place on Earth. So the first 3 hours of her working day was spent trying to relocate me to California. And then I skipped lunch today, right?
You did,
to
yes.
work on yes. relocating, getting my plane thing switched over. So finally, at about 2 o'clock today, we were all set to now go to Disneyland. And we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, so not very productive this morning at CFC. We were doing other things. So we, yeah.
Well,
so,
those things just
hey,
kind
it's
of
real,
come
it's
up
real
sometimes.
Life for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, guys. What happens if old Dave wasn't here? What happens if Hughes wasn't there at his household? What happens if Josh was not at his household anymore? So many people that I run across and good friends will say to me, yeah, I have life insurance. I have five times my pay. And guess what? It's all through my work. And I'm like, all right, let's do some math on this, guys. Do you have a mortgage? Yeah. How much is it? $300,000. Okay. How much money do you make? I make $100,000 a year. Okay. How are you going to replace that for the next 20 years? That's $2 million by itself. What about completion of saving money for your kids' college or retirement planning? You know, how much is that going to cost? When you add this all up, guys, it is easily 10 to 12 times your annual income without any questions mm-hmm. asked. Wouldn't you agree?
Definitely.
So, Josh, how much insurance do you have? Do I need to write an application on you right now to help you
I
get
think
to where
need
you need to be?
We need to meet after this.
Yeah, we'll let Hughesy write it. But here's the thing. You also don't want to tie everything, and Doug, you've said this many times, to your employer. Do I want my retirement tied to my employer and my insurance is tied to my employer and all these things tied to my employer? No, because things change. What happens if you lose your job? They might say, hey, Doug, you can take this insurance with you, but guess what? It costs an arm and, oh, by the way, and a leg.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had my insurance outside of work, I own it. It's my own insurance, and it doesn't matter what happens with my employer.
Absolutely. And, you know, the couple things that happen along those lines, too, when people rely strictly on the employer, say they've worked somewhere for 10 years and that thought process has been in place that I just have it through my employer. Well, then when you change jobs, you're 10 years older. Your health has probably gone one direction or another. Mm-hmm. If it hasn't gone in a good direction, it's going to be harder, more expensive, and you're 10 years down the track. So, you know, we always talk to people about life insurance as it's something that the best policy to have is the one that you're, when you pass away, is in force. And
yeah.
So how do you do that? How do you accomplish that? And we have seen so many mistakes made on buying term and investing the difference because people don't do it. And what if the market doesn't give you what you want? What if the returns aren't there? So, you know, when you look at your risk profile and your own risk pool, you need to have a good evaluation of what life insurance really, truly can mean.
Doug, I know you need to check out. I appreciate you being part of the show, and thank you for all you
have
do.
You're welcome. Have a good show.
You know, the other thing is, folks, what kind of insurance to own? Doug hit on it. It's the kind that's there when you need it the most. That's when you die. Term insurance is fantastic. It's cheap. You can get a lot of it for a little bit of money. But I match up insurances to the different needs that I have. Okay, let's think about my mortgage, right? There's one need. That's a term, so term insurance works really well. During my working life, I'm going to have some accumulation or some income needs, I should say. That's a term, right? So that maybe term works well for that. What about things like pension insurance? Like, how do I insure my own pension? Well, a pension is going to last as long as you do. So guess what? You're going to need some insurance that lasts as long as you do. That's not term. That's permanent insurance. So what's the difference? In fact, I can tell you this. LIMRA, which is an industry thing that tracks this kind of stuff, says that less than 1% of term policies, term insurance policies, result in a death claim. But 100% of permanent insurance policies that are actually held result in a death claim. So when I talk about needing some insurance even beyond your accumulation years, raising your kids, your mortgage, there's always a need for permanent insurance. I've never once, folks, met with a widow or widower that walked in my office who at 75, 80, 60 years old, it doesn't make any difference, that said to me, man, he had way too much life insurance. I've never heard that. I've never heard someone say, man, I wish he would have bought term insurance that lapsed 5 years ago before he died. Or something crazy like that. Here's the thing. I look at life insurance, first of all, as legacy. Legacy not for your kids, not for your grandkids, but for the surviving spouse. The surviving spouse, here's the problem. You always lose at least one check. Social Security check, you might lose two. Maybe a pension check or reduction. And the double whammy or triple whammy is, and your taxes go up. You go from a married filing joint tax return, the most favorable in the tax code, to a single taxpayer, the most costly. So here I am. Could I not use some tax-free money that was given to me by a life insurance policy? I just think that too many people are just down on things that they don't quite continue. They don't think through. That pension, I could buy my own insurance to insure my pension. So instead of taking a $300, $400, $500 a month reduction so that my spouse receives 50%, what if I took that $500 and went out and bought my own permanent life insurance? Well, then if my spouse dies before me, guess what? I still have the life insurance. It can go to my kids or grandkids. What happens if we die close together? That insurance I paid the pension company doesn't really amount to much. What about long-term care? A lot of these policies now have long-term care features where, yes, I know if I die, I get this, but if I don't, I could use it for long-term care as well. There was one contract I ran across the other day, and we use this quite frequently in practice, and I own one myself. My mother owns one. My father owns one, that where you can access up to 2% of the death benefit monthly, tax-free, for long-term care. So if I had a $400,000 policy, I could take 2% or up to $8,000 a month and accelerate that death benefit. Now, the cool thing about these policies, it's different than long-term care. Long-term care is health insurance. Don't fool yourself. It's health insurance. I have a problem, I get assistance, then they get reimbursed, and that's how it works. And you have to use a skilled facility to get it. I have to go to a facility or use skilled personnel that costs a lot of money. Under these life insurance policies, at least the ones that I've used, if you cannot perform two of your six activities of daily living, that's like transferring, eating, bathing, you know, going to the restroom, or you have a cognitive impairment like dementia, Alzheimer's, then you can go on claim. And that money will come to your mailbox, and you can use that for whatever you want. In our own family situation, my father-in-law just passed away. He had dementia in May. And we had 24-hour, he had care for 4 years, and 24-hour care for over 2.5, 3 years. And did we use a skilled, licensed provider? No. We used a very capable person to help us. And her band of angels were her daughters, my niece, college kids. None of them were, like, quote, certified. They were just great people that cared a lot about him. Well, we could have used that money to pay them, but we couldn't have under a traditional long-term care arrangement. So I just want you to know, guys, that there are so many uses for life insurance, and I missed the boat when not talking about this during, quote, Life Insurance Awareness Month. It should always be Awareness Month of these kind of things, all right? So, hey, hopefully I motivated you to think of things just a little bit differently. When we come back, we're going to be talking to our friend Josh Norris over at our office, who is our Medicare consultant. We have open enrollment period coming up. We want to talk to Josh about what that means, who should be paying attention, and who can completely ignore all the stuff they're going to be hearing. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Man, I love this stuff. Can you tell? I could talk about it for hours and hours and hours and hours. And my wife would be like, please shut up. Let's talk about something else. Oh, my gosh. Josh Norris is in the house. He is our Medicare consultant over at Comprehensive Financial. And Josh has been such a great addition to our office, as we have so many people that have questions about this stuff. And you know what? I've been able to forget all the answers and just refer them to Josh. And Josh, you do a great job. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
We got open enrollment coming up.
That's right.
And even I have forgotten what in the heck that means. I know it's going to be coming up here, what, mid-October?
October 15th.
And it runs through
December 7th.
There we go. Yep. D-Day.
That's right.
And the first thing is, you know, what is open enrollment and what does it mean?
Sure. Technically, it's the annual enrollment period. Sorry, Dave, don't want to correct you like that.
But no, please do. Please
is the technical term is the annual enrollment period, and it's the period in which, if you're already in the Medicare world, 65 and older, it's the time where you can make a change to your drug plan, your Medicare Advantage plan, and even your Medicare supplement plan.
So people that are already on Medicare, they have this open enrollment period. Why would you want to change if you're already in the system?
Sure. A lot of reasons why. So, you know, if you're in terms of drug plans, you know, if your long-term drug needs change, you definitely want to reevaluate your plan. Make sure you're in the right plan. Premiums can change. They can go up. Formularies can change. You know, a drug plan can remove a drug from its formulary that was on the previous year. So that's the reason why you'd want to change. Same thing with Advantage plans. Your doctor, if you have an Advantage plan, a lot of times the doctor that you love to see says, hey, you know what? I'm not accepting that insurance anymore. So you're kind of like, well, I don't want to keep this insurance then. You can switch and change to a plan that that doctor still accepts.
So Advantage plans and the traditional Medicare supplement plans. So during the open enrollment period, can you, if you've been on one, can you switch to another
one? You can,
one?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, if you say you've been on an Advantage plan and for some reason you're just like, you know what? I'm not really liking this. I want to try a supplement out. You can do that. We can enroll you into a drug plan that'll disenroll you from the Advantage plan, and then we can set you up with the Medicare supplement. And you can also go vice versa. There's some people that have gone from a Medicare supplement to an Advantage plan. Now's the time to do that coming up October 15th.
Now, I've heard people just through the office, you know, you would say to me, well, they needed to stick with what they already have. What are some of the situations where people just need to stick with what they already have?
Sure. So, you know, in cases of, you know, if you have certain health conditions, obviously, you know, Medicare supplements can decline people. So if you're somebody with an Advantage plan and you have, you know, chronic issues, you're most likely not going to be able to get a supplement. I'm not saying you won't, but you most likely won't. So you may just need to stay in the Advantage plan or vice versa. I've had people who have, you know, debilitating issues, and but they have a supplement, and really it's just best for them to keep that supplement because they're in it. They get great coverage. They can go to all the specialists and doctors they choose to go see, and those would be the cases.
So obviously we're coming up on October 15th. Mm-hmm. We're going to have you on each and every week during this enrollment period to inform and educate people. They don't have to wait until that time to come see you. They can come see you now and kind of gear up for this.
Sure, we can come. Yeah, we can definitely meet before and strategize, but to officially make a change to enroll in a plan, we would have to do it in between the October 15th and December 7th.
All right. So you've sent out a lot of mailers to educate people, and if they get one, it's came from us,
that's
came
right.
from you.
That's right.
And if they'd like to contact us, go to cfci.us, cfci.us. Check out our fantastic new website while you're there, too, and contact us, and we'll make sure that you get in touch with Josh. He does a great job of educating people to do the right thing when it comes to these supplements and Advantage plans and just educating them about Medicare in general. So, Josh, appreciate you hanging out with us.
Thank
you. We'll talk to you again next week.
That's right.
People are going to get sick of hearing about it, but we want to make sure that they're in good hands.
That's right.
When it comes to these critical times. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, come back, wrap up the show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes, just a couple minutes to go in the big program. If you missed any of the show, as I've always said, go listen on Saturday a.m., 9 o'clock in the morning here on WGCL, or head over to WGCLradio.com. You can listen to it there as well, or go to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. Just type in Your Money with David Hayes over in the iTunes area. It will pop right up. You click it, you subscribe, and then each and every week when we have a new show pop up, boom, you get that. And Alex and Clan here at the station have been doing a great job of keeping those shows updated for everyone to listen to. If you're an Android user, you can go to Google Play Music and do the exact same thing. Hey, traditionally, the first week of every month is the investment show. And last week we had Hot Rod Holloway on, and we talked a lot of investments, so I decided to boot it for this week and kick it to next week. So hopefully we'll have a lot to talk about. Got some budget stuff that was passed, maybe some more on tax reform. A lot of good stuff to always talk about. And it's hard, you know, it's hard when you have stuff that's in the news like what happened this past week. It's just, you know, intolerable. I mean, it's something that just makes you sick at your stomach. And, you know, that could have been any of us sitting out there listening to a country music concert. So far, I haven't known anyone personally that was affected, but I'm sure through the 6 degrees of separation, won't be long before I'm going to hear about a cousin, a brother, a sister, an uncle, a nephew, a spouse, someone that was there and affected by that terrible, terrible situation in Las Vegas. So our thoughts and, of course, prayers continue to be there for those people, and we wish everyone well, and hopefully next week there's no bad news. We'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.